Good morning. You're listening to 91.5 KUNV, and this is Neon Eden. I'm your host, Tovin LePan, reporter for the Las Vegas Sun. My co-host, Patrick Kulikin, is on vacation and should be back next week. The bells will ring and classes will start Monday for the 2012-2013 school year. And there's been a great deal happening over the summer in terms of teachers' contracts, policies, No Child Left Behind. And here to talk about Nevada's public school system is Las Vegas Sun education reporter Paul Takahashi. Thanks for joining us, Paul.
Thanks for having me.
Now, we all know schools love tests and assessments, so let's turn the tables and assess our schools just to get started. A couple reports came out over the summer, not really saying anything new, but give us a rundown. Where do our schools stand compared to the other 49 states?
Sure. So the NEE Casey Foundation came out with their 22nd annual report. They basically rank every year how kids are doing across the nation. And they found that Nevada kids aren't doing so well, especially in education, where Nevada ranks dead last in the nation, 50th in the nation in terms of public education. Basically, they looked at four different factors: kids not attending preschool, fourth graders not proficient in reading, eighth graders not proficient in math, and high school students not graduating on time. And in all those factors, Nevada has not really improved that much. And so they're looking at a 44% graduation rate across the state in terms of 2008-2009 data. So, you know, the state is a little bit old, but it goes to show how far Nevada has to go in order to improve education here in the state.
And now not everything has to do with money, but where do we stand in per pupil spending?
Sure. You know, Nevada, you know, a lot of people say it's ranked towards the bottom. It's really more like 30, you know, low 30s. So, you know, it's definitely lower than the average. But, you know, a lot of people point to that as one of the problems that Nevada has in terms of funding for an adequate education for students.
Right. And then another thing that the surveys found was that Nevadans actually recognize that our schools are not that good, and that I think three quarters said that it's somewhat of a problem or is a big problem in terms of the quality of our public schools.
Right, and it's a widespread, you know, perception about schools here in Nevada. You know, people have trouble coming in. You know, I was at a Nellis Air Force Base orientation for new parents coming on base last year and around this time, and a lot of parents were worried, you know, coming from Japan and, you know, off-base countries and stations. You know, they're saying, well, here, you know, we've heard even in Japan or even in places like Iraq and Afghanistan, hey, you know, the schools here aren't so good. You know, coming back, you know, after deployment, you know, what does Nevada have to offer?
Well, and that's where, and obviously people look at that, you know, families moving here. And,
sure.
You know, we talk about getting more people to move here and jobs and things like that. And it's tough when your school systems aren't up to snuff.
Absolutely.
And now the most recent news from this week is that the Clark County Teachers Union, the main teachers union, Clark County Education Association, rejected the most recent contract offer from the school district. And now there's a lot been going on this summer with that. I was wondering if you could just give us a good recap of sort of all the developments when it comes to this year's contract negotiation.
Sure. So this year's contract, of course, has to do with last year, what happened last year. So let me go back to last school year and tell you what happened there. So the teachers union and the district have been negotiating pretty much all year last year on a contract. And it sort of happened, since last spring, you know, so they've been negotiating this for a while, and all the way up until May, you know, there wasn't a decision made on the contract for last year. And in May, an arbitrator basically decided, hey, you know, the school district has the money to allow pay increases for all these teachers, which the district had been paying all this time last year, and basically they said, well, hey, you know, you have the money to pay for this. And so the school district said, hey, we actually don't. You know, the school district said, we have a $64 million budget hole that we have to fill. And the only way we're going to fill it is by looking at our budget and seeing, you know, what's the largest thing that we can cut. And, of course, the largest part of any budget, really, in a governmental agency is salaries and benefits. And so they eliminated about 1,015 positions last year or over the summer. And that included about 419 actual teachers in the classroom. And so, there were a lot of protesting by the union, a lot of tears at school board meetings about, these young teachers coming back, to their meeting. They just got off for their summer vacation, and they're saying, hey, we lost our jobs. Why us? Unfortunately, all these teachers have been invited back. These teachers, they were higher than expected resignations and retirements by teachers last year, so about 600 plus. And so all 419 teachers were invited back. We're not quite sure if they all took the offer, but they're all back in the classrooms. But there's still fewer teachers in the classroom because they eliminated all these positions. So there's going to be a class size increase of about 3 additional students next year. And so I'm sure a lot of parents are going to be concerned about that. And
What does that bring? Do you know what the average total then in per class, we're talking about?
Sure. It's usually about 34, 35 students now.
That's a lot of students.
Yeah. I mean, one of the highest in the nation, actually. Okay. So that's kind of, research has been kind of mixed on the effect of class sizes on student achievement. But, definitely for the teachers, it's a lot more work, and there's probably going to be less individual attention per student, so that's going to be tough. But going back to your earlier question, now they're negotiating for a contract this year, and the school district, sort of seeing what happened last year, said we're going to declare impasse very early and get into arbitration earlier so that we won't have to wait until May until a decision is made about contracts, and we won't have to lay off teachers so late into the year. And so basically, they've declared impasse, and they're going through the arbitration process, but in terms of still negotiating, they're still kind of meeting and they're still kind of deciding. And so last night, on Monday night, the school district had a proposal on the table, and the union met. About 1,500 teachers showed up to their back-to-school meeting, and they sort of overwhelmingly rejected it. And so this process is going to kind of continue probably well into the school year. We're not quite sure if it's going to last until May like it did last year, but we'll see how long it goes.
And now, do we get details in these contracts, or are they kept secret, as they go about, sharing proposals and passing proposals back?
Sure. So Nevada Revised Statutes 288, it's sort of a confidential matter. So usually during school board meetings, they'll have a session where they, a closed session, they go, to the back and they talk about, contract negotiations, how that's going. And so, this meeting was closed to the media, and the details of the proposal aren't really public either. So we're not quite sure what they're offering and what the back to forth thing is, but it's probably going to be about pay raises again.
And now one thing that both the district and the union do talk about are these tax initiatives that there's two different tax initiatives that each one is supporting or backing. And could you give us a rundown of those tax initiatives?
Sure. So, we were talking earlier in the program, how does per pupil funding rank? How does Nevada's per pupil ranking, rank among all the nation? And, in terms of that, it's quite low, a lot of people say. And so there are two different tax initiatives. One's by the school district, the other's by the teachers union, the state union. The state union one is, of course, lobbying for more money. This is a 2% kind of a business tax, margin tax on businesses. And that's supposed to raise about $800 million, I believe, for we're not quite sure what it's going to go for, but it's going to go towards education is their goal. Not quite sure if it's going to go towards early childhood education or lowering class sizes. We're not quite sure, but it's going to go towards K-12 education. Now the school district is looking at a different problem. They have a lot of aging buildings. They say buildings such as J.D. Smith Middle School in the Central Valley that is 58 years old. It's got floors that are flooding whenever it rains. It's got air conditioning units that are failing in the summertime. They're shuffling kids around just to make sure that the roof doesn't collapse on them, or things are quite dire is what I'm hearing. And I took a tour of the school, and it's definitely an aging campus. So they're looking at some of these aging campuses, and they're saying that the school district has a $5.3 billion need in over the next decade in terms of campus maintenance and renovations and building new schools in overcrowded areas. And so they're going applying for a tax initiative that is going to increase property taxes by $74 on a home assessed at $100,000. And so that's going to be a six-year capital levy, and they're trying to put it on the ballot. But there's been a lot of pushback, especially from some conservative think tank in town, Nevada Public Research, Nevada Policy Research Institute, who sort of filed a lawsuit against the school district this summer, trying to block this tax initiative from being put on the ballot.
Yeah, and I guess Nevada obviously has a culture of hating all taxes, and this idea, you know, and any tax is tough to get through in Nevada historically.
Sure, and especially now, you know, with the economy sort of in the tank, you know, it's very difficult to ask, you know, taxpayers to shell out more money for schools and things like that. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the future. And just, you know, the Nevada Policy Research Institute, they filed this lawsuit, and a judge ruled on Monday, actually, that, you know, the tax initiative was going to still stay on the ballot. But we'll see what happens. You know, they're trying to, you know, take it all the way to the Supreme Court. So we're not quite sure, you know, what the time frame is going to be for this kind of lawsuit, but it's definitely going to be an issue that we'll take a look at in the future.
And now, also just over the summer, the school district applied for and got a waiver, or Nevada applied for and got a waiver from No Child Left Behind, the George W. Bush era, you know, school sort of assessment and accountability system. But now, that means Nevada has to implement its own assessment system, right?
Right, yeah. So, you know, for the past, you know, decade plus, you know, we've been under this No Child Left Behind, which sort of had the goal by the end of 2014 that all Nevada students would be 100% proficient in math and reading. And last year, only 61% of Clark County schools were even, you know, proficient in those two measures. And so that is going to be very difficult to attain, you know, in that short amount of time. And so Nevada was struggling to meet that goal. And if they didn't meet that goal by 2014, there were going to be some very punitive measures taken on the school, on the school district and the school system here in the state. And so to kind of get away from that structure, Nevada applied for a waiver. A waiver program was announced last year in September by President Obama and Secretary of Education Arne Duncan. And Nevada applied in the second round, and they just basically got the waiver. And so they have to come up with a new plan, a new accountability system, they call it, for the state. They're not going to have that same goal of 2014, but by 2020, the state superintendent, Jim Guthrie, says he wants to see all Nevada students performing at least at the median sort of average, you know, level for all this for the entire country. So that's going to be the new goal for the state, and they're coming out with some new teacher evaluation systems, some new school evaluation systems. They're coming out with some different plans and a new curriculum, a more rigorous curriculum for students here. And so they're hoping that all these kind of new initiatives and that goal, and they're still kind of looking at ways to how to get to that point by 2020, but that's going to be kind of the new system that Nevada will be operating under after No Child Left Behind.
And we should mention, right, this has become really common, applying for these waivers, right? It was like 32 other states or something like that?
Yeah, Nevada became, I believe, the 33rd or 34th state, actually, to get the waiver. And so it's kind of been a widespread issue. Only one state, Iowa, was rejected. And so far, you know, they're still waiting on big states like California and things like that. But there are many states now that have gotten these waivers. And until Congress sort of looks at the reauthorization of No Child Left Behind and, you know, ways to kind of tweak it and revise it, these waivers are kind of that Band-Aid until that point in which they're going to do that.
And was it just that, like you said, with Nevada, that every state was sort of seeing these really strict punishments or just, the consequences of not meeting these benchmarks, right? And that might have been worse than just allowing them to continue down certain paths or come up with different benchmarks, possibly?
Right. You know, this is law, and so, you know, No Child Left Behind is the law, and so, you know, all the states have to follow it. And, you know, if they don't follow it, you know, they're going to have punitive measures. And so, you know, these waivers are kind of a way for the Obama administration to say, hey, you know, these kind of, you know, this goal was a little bit too unrealistic. We know that, you know, we're not on track. None of the states are going to be on track to meet this goal. And so we're going to say, hey, we're going to give out these waivers. You know, as the executive branch, we don't have the power to, you know, nullify the law, but we're going to make sure that you're given an opportunity to say, hey, we have an alternate assessment plan, an alternate accountability system we're going to abide by. And so let us go out from under this no child left behind mess and move on.
And now another thing, the district, the Clark County School District, it has applied for federal money to implement a pay-for-performance plan for teachers in 11 of the district's worst performing schools, right? And so you tell me a little about this plan and how much money they're trying to get.
Sure. Well, the school district is working with the state on a new teacher evaluation system. And so there are going to be some, there's a legislative, not a legislative, executive kind of committee that was Teachers and Leaders Council that's coming out with some recommendations in December, actually, on some of these teacher evaluation systems. So, you know, how do we evaluate how well a teacher is teaching students? And based on that sort of evaluation system, the next thing, of course, is to say, well, we're going to reward teachers who are performing very well. So this pay performance plan is the next logical step. And so the school district applied for federal grant dollars. I think it's to the tune of $48 million and this hasn't been, this is just being applied for. So, you know, the state or the school district hasn't received any of this money yet. But it's basically for the state's largest school district and the fifth largest school district in the country, actually, to look at way to implement a teacher evaluation system first and then a pay performance plan. And so that's kind of in the beginning stages. We're not quite sure yet what the recommendations are going to be for the evaluation system. We're not quite sure, you know, how this pay performance plan is going to work, but there's going to be a lot of talk in the coming legislative session in 2013 in February about, you know, how do we go about implementing a teacher evaluation system and a pay performance plan.
And right now, you know, most teachers, right, are given pay increases, what, based on longevity, increased training and things like that, but not necessarily on the evaluations done at the classroom level, right?
Right. And that's a pretty common trend across the country. You know, there's a kind of a rubric, if you will, about, you know, salary increases based on, you know, educational attainment. You know, if you're a PhD versus a master's versus just a bachelor's degree, and then there's also how long you've been in the district and seniority. So, you know, up to 30 years in the school district, and so basically that's been kind of this norm for you know, decades now, and now there's a push across the nation by education, quote-unquote, reformers, looking at saying, well, hey, that's not really an adequate measure for measuring how students are learning and how teachers are teaching students. And so they're saying, well, we need a better system. And so right now a lot of states are looking at this, and there's a lot of pushback, especially from teachers' unions, about, you know, releasing these scores and things like that for teachers.
And speaking about pushback and younger teachers and older teachers and evaluating teachers, I mean, have you sensed, you know, just covering schools here, that there's a split between, that, say, younger generations and older generations as maybe some people get on board with proponents of change while others want to keep the old system? Is there that divide of an age divide, really, among the teachers' ranks?
Sure, you know, there's a common perception about, you know, the older teachers, younger teachers, you know, a lot of it could be true, a lot of it could be false, where, you know, it's not really exact science, if you will. But yeah, you know, there are a lot of folks in the school district who are trying to meet, you know, their pensions and, you know, their requirements for that. And so, you know, they are very content with going on with how things have been going. They've been doing it for decades. So there's a little pushback when it comes to new curriculums, you know, new programs, you know, what's the new flavor of the week? So there's been a lot of this, you know, here's the silver bullet to fix education in the country. And, you know, they've seen a lot of it. So there's a lot of pushback on that front. And there are also younger teachers who, you know, perhaps say, hey, you know, I'm open to new things, you know, new technology, for example, in the classroom. That's been a big push by the school district here, looking at iPads and new digital smart boards and things like that. And if you're a longtime teacher, you know, that those kind of things can be very difficult to adapt to. And so there is that dynamic. In really any industry, you know, if the old guard versus the new fresh faces in the industry. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens, you know, with that dynamic and what happens when seniority is no longer really an issue. You know, that was seniority-based layoffs were supposed to be kind of eliminated under the most recent changes by the legislature. But as you saw in the most recent layoffs, they were still... Most of the teachers who were laid off in the school district were, in fact, first-year teachers. And so there's always kind of that tension there as well. And when it comes to layoffs, there's also that tension when it comes to new things, new programs, new technologies. And so that's going to be kind of a really an ever, you know, ever-present issue in really any industry.
And now... we spoke a little about this sort of 11 designated worst performing schools in the district. These are our turnaround schools, right? And you've been doing a year-long project or even longer on the turnaround schools. And could you talk a little bit about that designation and what the school district's been doing at those schools?
Sure. So the school district has new school zones, basically new groups of schools. They've got a zone basically for the best performing schools called autonomous zone. And then they have a designation, a group of schools, 11 schools, for the worst performing schools, and that's based on a variety of different measures by both the federal level and by the school district, and it's called the turnaround zone. And there are 11 schools in there right now, and they include the federal school improvement grant schools, the schools that received federal grant dollars to overhaul the school, you know, change out the teachers, change sometimes even the principal, and bring in some new supports and technologies and things like that to essentially, quote-unquote, turn around the school. And then there are also some one-star schools. There's a new ranking system, and all the one-star schools are basically, most of the one-star schools are in the turnaround zone. And so, The Sun did a major project this past year looking at three of the turnaround high schools, Chaparral, Mojave, and Western High School, and looking at, you know, what kind of initiatives they were doing to improve students. And we're actually still waiting for the data that by the school district and the state actually to see how far they've come. But just looking, you know, going on campus and looking around and, you know, talking to students, teachers, and some of the parents, you know, you kind of get a sense that there's been some improvements at these schools. The culture has changed at these schools. You know, kids aren't, you know, loitering outside or cutting class or ditching. You know, they're actually running to class and trying to be on time. And there's a more serious attitude when it comes to academics and education on those campuses, these students say. So we'll see, you know, what exactly the data says when they come back. And there's always a little bit of delay when it comes to data. There's always even a year-long delay sometimes. So we're still waiting on those results, but there's been a lot of movement in these schools, and we're kind of anxious to see if they continue for the three-year grant.
Right. And now one of the schools you have, Chaparral, is you said that I believe when this first was announced, there was some protest from people affiliated with the school about, you know, would the changes be too wholesale and take away people maybe that they liked, teachers they liked, administrators they liked, things like that. And then a year later, you sort of caught up with those same people to see how they felt. And what did you hear from those, you know, from those people specifically at Chaparral that in terms of a year later, how did they see the turnaround process?
Sure. You know, Chaparral, of course, was the high school, you know, that was most vehemently against this sort of federal, you know, turnaround program. You know, the feds were coming in and they were saying, hey, we're going to take away your principal, take away your some of your teachers, we're going to overhaul the school. And they didn't like those changes. You know, the parents and students, they went to the flagpole, two years ago, I guess now, you know, this not this past May, but the past, the May passed, and they said, hey, we're protesting. And, you know, the superintendent, Dwight Jones, went to the school actually right after the protest and sat down with some of the students and the parents and said, hey, you know, what is, you know, the concern, and listened to them. And all those concerns were, you know, sort of kind of, you know, risen. And, you know, there was a lot of debate about, you know, why are we doing this at this school? And about a year later, you know, I caught up with some of those same students who were protesting, and, you know, they were a little bit more happy. There were some changes that they didn't like. You know, they said that some of the rules were too strict, and they didn't like some of the schedule changes that happened at Chaparral. For example, the lunch period is all the way at the end of the school day, and that's kind of a way for fewer fights to occur on campus, because there's no lunch on campus. They weren't happy with some of the rules regarding, you know, posters on the wall and things like that. But, you know, overall, you know, a lot of the kids that came back that I talked to said, hey, you know, we like this new principal. We like, you know, our new staff. We like, you know, where the school's going. There's a lot of focus. There's a lot of positive energy now on campus, where in previous years, hey, you know, we were kind of the, you know, the bottom performing school in this school district. So we'll see how it goes in the coming years. But there's been a lot of, at least for the folks who were there before and thereafter, they see a lot of change.
Mm-hmm. And now we've talked a lot about secondary education, but what about higher education? You know, I know one thing going on right now is they're trying to come up with a new funding formula, right, for the system of higher education. And that's an ongoing talk, right? Have they made much progress, or where do those negotiations stand?
Well, it seems like they've made a lot of progress. You know, they've been discussing about this issue for years, and there's this sort of perception, you know, that the South, of course, Southern institutions don't get as much money as Northern institutions. There are different institutions with different methods and different missions and different types, you know, community colleges, rural colleges, you know, major universities, research universities. And so how to adequately fund all these seven institutions in the state has been a long, you know, kind of debate. And this funding formula that we currently have is seen by many as kind of very confusing, very difficult to understand. And so there's been this huge debate, and it's sort of in the wrapping up stages right now, by the end of February, when the budget's supposed to be kind of brought to the governor's office. There should probably, hopefully, be some kind of proposal on the table for a new funding formula, and that's really to be voted on and determined by the legislature. So it's right now in legislative committee. Chancellor Dan Klage is looking at it right now. They're coming up with different plans and different models, but there's a model that's going to be in place, hopefully, you know, in the coming years.
And now I understand one of the changes, right, will be that each campus would keep its revenue from its students, right, its student fees. And was that money redistributed, like collected and then redistributed throughout the system before?
Right, yeah. That was basically the plan before. And now, you know, each campus is going to be able to keep its own tuition. And then there's going to be a pool of money, about $30 to $60 million or so, that's going to be redistributed by the state. Those are state funds to each of the institutions. And so kind of the plan that they're looking at right now is looking at, well, how do we distribute that $360 million to all these states, to all these institutions adequately?
And that's been obviously like a source of contention. When you mentioned this North-South, and we're here in the South, obviously. So between UNLV and UNR, that's a big issue, obviously, how the money gets distributed.
Absolutely. And, UNR has all those older campuses, campus buildings, and, operation and maintenance was a big issue in the past and when it came to funding. And so they're looking at maybe trying to move away from that model and looking at, well, how many students are you actually graduating? How are you performing? You know, how many students are on campus, but also, you know, how well are you actually serving your students?
All right. Well, so should make for an interesting school year. Thanks for joining us, Paul, to talk about everything that's happening with Nevada's public schools.
All right. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Well, you've been listening to Neon Eden on 91.5 KUNV. Thanks to our producer, Steven Zeller. Have a good morning.